everyone. It's Brian Hutchison, aka the Global Career Guy, and welcome back to yet another episode of Behind the Science of Career Development. I continue to look throughout the world to find exciting people to have fresh, new, and important career conversations with so that we career development professionals can learn from one another, grow together as a community, and continue to serve our clients better, better, and better. Now, there are times in my international travels where I bump into someone and it's really their spirit, the presence of their soul that really impacts me. And I must be honest, I can't even remember the moment I met my current guest today. It's been probably a decade or so, but I feel such a sense of joy every time I get to speak to Miss Phoenix Ho, and she has been kind enough to join us today. Welcome, Phoenix. I'd love for you to introduce yourself the way you like to be introduced.
Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for having me in your show. Hello, everyone. My name is Phoenix Ho, and exactly like it means is a bird, the bird. My dad named me that name, so I would love to be called Phoenix. And I am currently working in Vietnam as the co-founder and the trainer of Showman Career Development Social Enterprise. So that is me.
And Showman means peaceful river, is that correct?
Yes, it means peaceful river.
And can you tell me a little bit about the why behind the name?
Yes, the metaphor behind it is we think a person's, especially in Vietnam's career development journey is like a river. There are times when it's full of water, peaceful. There are times when we can't even see any water in it at all. There are times it is going through rush water. And we want to be the companion in this journey of everyone, where whether they are in peaceful or in rush or in a very dry reason, we will be there for them. Wow. So that's the metaphor behind it.
That really speaks to me. Maybe 13 to 15 years ago, I remember sitting with my mentor, Dr. Skip Niles, Spencer Niles, as he was talking about his earliest ideas that became Hope Action Theory. And all of them were built around the same sort of river metaphor that he had in his mind that grew into that amazing theory.
Wow, I didn't know that. That is beautiful to hear.
I think this might fall under the category of great minds think alike. Dr. Niles and Phoenix Ho having the same thoughts a world away.
Tell me, it's a social enterprise.
Showman, like, what does it do? What is the enterprise or what is the company for?
We are doing a lot of things, but mainly we have several audiences to serve. The core group of audience that we are serving are individuals who want to become career practitioners. So we offer trainer workshops and programs. We offer supervision. We offer a lot of support services after they complete the training. We maintain, created and then help maintain the community to foster growth and development in Vietnam. We also expand our services to teachers, school leaders, parents, students. But we are very careful not to compete with the trainers that we train. So we do projects that the trainers are not yet able to do. And then the projects and the services that the trainee that we train can do, then we would let them do it. So at the moment, career partitioning field in Vietnam is still very young. It's like a toddler compared to the other developing countries. So we have done a number of steps that we think are very good for the country. And we are hoping that we will continue to grow throughout the years.
Yeah, very good. And if my memory and my research are correct, you've also do some tool development or translation of tools for career development?
Yes. Well? So it is in the career service delivery model. We follow that model of having a free channel of information for everyone who want to, they can access to it. Because in the moment, our government is so busy with all the tasks that we don't have a free career resources similar to ONET or My Future or Careers New Zealand. Mm-hmm. We don't have it yet. So Shomang collaborated with the community leaders, many volunteers, so that we can have a information channel for free for everyone. And so in it, we ask for leaders around the world who are so generous and allow us to translate and use it for free, because actually we don't charge anybody for anything on it. So we have that, and young people or parents or any practitioner who use the channel, they can actually access to materials and tools for free. They can use it for teaching, they can use it for self career development. Yeah. So that is the basic step that we do as a community project.
Yeah. The big reason I wanted to bring you on today was to talk about social entrepreneurialism, because it seems to be, at least in my network, a dominant model in the Asia Pacific region. I've had on Raza Abbas from Pakistan. I've talked to Praveen Parishmar from India, who have these sort of social enterprises as the startup engine for creating a career development platform for people in their country. I think maybe the best way to approach this is to really take you back to that moment when you decided to start your social enterprise. Can you tell me about that decision-making process for you? And I don't know, tell me a good story, Phoenix.
Brian, I still vividly remember that process and the journey going through it. I met my co-founder, who is 15 years younger than I am, an amazing, gifted young woman. We met in 2015. And then continue, you know, the relationship of friends and people who have common interest in education. And then in 2018, she decided to focus in career development education. So we worked together in a Vietnamese company under Angel Investor. And we have wonderful friends and colleagues and leaders there. And then in 2019, we received news from our Angel Investor that we need to really grow on our own. And he suggested us that maybe we should become a social enterprise or private entity. And we had to go through a lot of thinking, going through different career consultants, mentors, educator, leaders in Vietnam and outside of Vietnam to ask for advice. And both Rian, my co-founder, and I were not people who were meant to do business. You know, Brian, you know me for a long time. You probably know that I can't even know the difference between making money and not making money. You know, it's like, I'm like, oh God, really, this is your calling for me? And during the journey of interviewing and talking to different mentors, we learned that if we really wanted to pursue what we wanted to pursue, we can't avoid the responsibility that comes as leaders mm-hmm. and as a startup. Yeah. And one mentor learned a very painful lesson, and she told us, please, whatever you do, have freedom. In terms of financial management, you need to own your own company to make the decision you want. Because look at what you're doing. I don't think you will make money. She was so blunt. I don't think you guys will make money. You're lucky that you earn what you want for your staff and don't underpay them. So at the end of the time, we say, okay, if this is the decision, the responsibility we have to take, we'll take it. We don't go into NPO. We don't go into private practice or entity. We think social enterprise is the best model for us. Although in Vietnam, social enterprise is not receiving any special support at all yet, not yet, right. Hopefully in the future. We actually have to be more, not careful, but we have to really be abiding with certain tax law to make sure we are legal and we are good. So mm-hmm. It's not that we are receiving any special treatment, not in Vietnam. Mm. But being a social enterprise, in the long run, we want to be recognized as a B Corp internationally. Mm-hmm. And that's how we can do more things, upscale with our dreams. The decision making was really, really hard because I knew it would come with a lot of responsibility. And I know that is not my strength. Mm-hmm. You know, is on the other side, being a counselor, being a trainer, being a speaker, working professionally, I am not afraid at all, but when it comes to managing a company, no matter how small or big, it takes a lot of, you know, training and learning and then practicing, and I'm not sure if I'm capable. So my co-founder and I sat down and say, you know what, let's do it. Let's see how it goes. Let's start. So we did it, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you think, and I do a little bit of coaching of private practice therapists here in the United States as they build a practice with other therapists that they bring on board. So when you think about that moment, when you realize there are capacities that your business will need that you do not naturally mm-hmm. possess, how do you make decisions mm-hmm. about, I should learn this, mm-hmm. I should let my partner do it, or I should bring in outside talent? Mm-hmm. That I would have to learn to trust, right?
I love this question. I think my strength and my co-founder kept teasing me is that I'm very trustful. Sometimes I trust my intuition, sometimes too much, but this time it was the right one. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I thought, okay, I'll just try. And then along the way, if I try my best and things don't work out, I'll learn from my failure. But right now, I'll try it, you know, mm-hmm. and trust one has to build and earn. At that moment, my co-founder and I, we knew about each other. We worked well together, but not until now that I really, oh my gosh, she's so talented. You know, it's like in my mind, back then, I'm like, wow, she can do what she was doing. But now I'm like, oh my God, this woman is so talented. She doesn't talk, she's a doer. Mm. She doesn't talk about her skills, her knowledge, her background. She's just like, I'll do it. And one thing I knew back then is that if she said, I'm committed, I knew she's committed. If I say I'm committed, I know I'm committed. And that's all I need back then. But I met too many people who can talk and not doing anything, right?
So yeah.
So yeah, with my co-founder and the team back then, four of us, we started out, we took action and we started out beginning of COVID. So it was a very, very scary journey and we have learned and grown, and looking back, it was amazing how we did it. I think it's the people, Brian. I think we are very lucky. We met the right people at the right time, doing the right thing in the right country.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. So I feel a little weird, but so is it okay to say the co-founder's name? Because she sounds amazing.
Queen, Her name is Nguyen, U-Y-E-N, Nguyen, yeah.
I need to meet her someday.
yes, you will. She's she hates spotlight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, is that kind of a personality. She's wonderful on stage, but for some reason she just want to be off stage. But yeah, she hates it when we say, oh, I take care of the expertise, you take care of the business side. We don't work like that. We all have to learn. I have to learn and understand financial management, people management. She's really good in career development areas, especially the employability skills and labor market. We work together, the whole team, marketing, student experience. But it's really, you can see the whole team where one person would shine in this area and the other person would shine in that area, and we actually work together. Yeah.
So I'm big on my mentor taught me that, I think the super quote that's, while we're busy earning a living, we're busy living a life. How has this enterprise that you've dedicated so much time to the last, has it been 8 years? How long?
This is our fifth year.
So
yeah.
Yeah. So how has it changed you, and how has it changed your life?
Two nights ago, my partner and I went out and for a cup of beer and some salad, and then we talked about this. We like, okay, so how did you and I individually has grown through this time? And I just came back from California visiting my father and my siblings and friends and cousins. I have a big extended family. You can see, we party all the time. And Vietnamese culture, even in the US, is all about poker, laughing, eating, playing around, talking. And coming back here and calming down, sitting with my partner. And, you know, I'm like, if I remain in the comfort zone of the international university where I worked at, I really love that university, I still do, I would grow, you know, in a way. I would grow, I would write more, I would present at conferences, I would, you know, I would grow in that area. But I wouldn't be who I am today. And what I have really appreciated throughout this journey is the acknowledgement that, oh my God, I don't know so much, Brian. I don't know so much. Yeah. My team members, all of them in the 1990s, so young. They call me older sister, right? And every time they knew, when every time I was stuck in the technology side, because I was teaching online, right? And fiddling with the older computers and Zoom, and they knew immediately my face turned pale. That, oh my God, Phoenix is in problem. They're like, oh my God, her face turned pale. I know. And then it's very funny that, you know, they would have the board stand next to me, say what to do right and stuff like that. I remember years ago, this is like only 3 years ago, and now I could do it so confidently. I still do mistakes. I still make very stupid mistakes when it comes to computer and stuff. But I'm, you know, I don't turn pale anymore. I would be calm and fix it and work with it. Technology is only one part of it, but it's also about, you know, how do you manage a company? How do you work with people? How do you, you know, we career development practitioner, we talk about motivating employee, retaining talent, growing them. But actually, when we are actually in a startup, then we like, oh, how do you really walk the talk? Hiring and letting people go, because that is in the best interest of the company and that person, is the best lesson I learned. And letting people go in the right way, so humane, with love, but with very logical decision making, actually is the best way to build relationship with your former employee. So those who left us now come back and become volunteers, and they said, so glad you let it go, because that's how we grow. But you know, is a team, now we have a team of seven core members. with 20 interns, volunteers, and part-timers. And we have to learn how to work in sync. And we have to learn how to, you know, respect, but then we also need to confront at the right time. The core team members know about our financial status. Every 2 weeks, we look at our financial management sheet, and then we know where we are, how much we make, how much we spend, how much we need to make more to make it through the next several months. We know about each other's salary. At the end of the year, every person decides how much they want to raise their own salary. You know, it's so beautiful. The whole journey is about, it's not about preaching, because of course, as a career counselor, you know, we learn and we know and we work in organizations, so I know about it. But going through this journey is like really experiencing every single step with pain and learning from it and crying because of it and constantly worry about being in bankrupted.
Yeah.
No security plan. No safety net. My God.
But you've done it.
We are still doing it.
That's right. I think if there's one core principle that I've really grown to believe in as a leader in any situation, it's transparency. Like a habit of transparency about the things happening in any group of people in any organization, the payoff comes when things get really hard.
Agree. Love it. Love it that you agree with me. Yeah. So glad to hear that. Yeah.
And I think broader, and I've had some really rich conversations with colleagues about this. I think that I think as a career professional, workers deserve that as well. Like, I've become fairly intolerant of job advertisements that don't have salary ranges on them. I'm very intolerant of that. For that very reason, it's a piece of information that shows mutual respect to put on the table, because you know what the range is.
Yes.
You know what you can and cannot pay for a position.
Yes.
So just as an example, so a culture of, you know, we talk a lot now about psychological safety at work, right? And we do a lot of that around issues of diversity and inclusion and equity. But transparency about appropriate things within a work setting is a huge part of creating a sense of psychological safety, I think, in the team.
Yes. We encourage the culture of being whole at work. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that you are forced to share your personal story. You are not. You choose who you share with. But when it comes to work, when it comes to finance, when it comes to decision to let go or hire, it's transparent. It's not that everybody has a say, no, because, you know, certain people have more knowledge. They should make that decision. But we all know why. And we don't have gossip. We don't have side conversation. We don't have things that we tell you, but you don't tell other people. No, we don't have that.
Yeah.
And it makes work so much more simple, that we really have the headaches inside of work, you know, on the work itself. We don't have headaches for matters that are not work related. Yeah.
You know, I think I've been looking for a culture for years now where women don't experience bias in the workplace, in that culture. So if it's okay, as you and your co-founder both identify as female, correct?
Yes, we are. Sure.
Could you give some insight of your experience and how you navigate being a female-led company? In an environment where there's still, you know, bias against women, and that's in every society. I'm not saying that about Vietnam.
Yes. actually in Vietnam, in the education setting, we have seen more women becoming leaders, especially now in this current time when I've met principals who were born in the 1980s or early 1990s, you know, female principals, and they are so quick in decision making and taking action. I'm like, woo! And my co-founder and I, we have to be very careful of not only choosing and working with other females. You know, we like, okay, we have to be very careful because we have beautiful, wonderful male mentors and teachers and collaborators everywhere. But you're right, Brian, it is not easy not to be biased. For example, I talked about my co-founder a lot because I she's amazing. You know, like the more I know about her, the more I think she's amazing she is. She is so gifted, really talented. And the first time when we worked together, I'm like, why is she so humble? You know, why does she know everything she knows and not saying that she knows it? Why do I have to be the person who say, actually, you know it, I don't. You know, why do you not saying that you know it? And along the way, I've learned from her that she has to hide it. She has to hide her intelligence and all the skills and everything else, the wisdom. And she doesn't dare to shine because she's so up there, yeah. Especially around male peers. And I'm like, that's BS, man. It's just like, women, don't do that to yourself. But it's, you know, it's just, I'm surprised of how, you know, how someone is not blossoming toward their potential just because of the gender. And actually, I don't think that's she. You know, I don't think that's the way she meant to be, but I observe it. And along the way, I realized that, oh, okay, she's not doing that anymore. She's making decision, taking steps up where, you know, I'll do it. Still having that humility of respecting and including everyone in the decision-making process. So it's a beautiful journey of seeing how women lead an organization. Yeah. In our field, I myself never believed that I could be a leader, Brian. I'm so good at telling my co-founder that, but I myself, I never believed. You know, it's, I don't know how and when it came into my mind, but I never thought that I could be a business leader, especially business leader. And when I met my mentor, he's from Malaysia, Singaporean from Malaysia, and he's like, what are you talking about? You are a leader, talk to your friends. And I told my friends and they like, well, I never question about your leadership skills, Phoenix. Where does it come from? So I'm so glad you asked me this question, Brian, because in the last 6 months, I asked myself, where did it come from? That I'm not capable of making a business leader.
Yeah.
I am not capable. Why? Where? So it is still a journey for me. I'm struggling every day, learning and beating myself up because of not learning it earlier. You know, why didn't I take MBA when I was young? Stuff like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's such a difficult problem at both the individual level, but also at the macro level, because, you know, our ideas at gender start at our earliest formative years, right, of our development. And so society, I believe, is shifting, and we can track those shifts over time. But, you know, we're operating in a time that's very different from you and when you and I were acculturated around ideas of gender and gender norms.
Yes.
And so I think that there's often a personal struggle of that lag effect. Mm. Oh my goodness, I'm so happy the world is becoming a little bit more fair, a little bit more just, a little bit more this. And there's so much work to do. And I'm still stuck back when I was 12 and learned these norms.
Yeah. Mentally, I'm stuck there.
Yeah. Well, before I just get all praiseworthy on you, I think the last question I'd like to just ask and hear what you'd like to say of where are you going to take this now for yourself personally? What's the future hold for you personally in this role? What will we look for in the coming years?
We have a big dream. I have a big dream. I really want from now until 2030, with Shengmang Social Enterprise, we can scale it up so that we can use technology similar to what virtual internship is doing, so that we can reach to every single individual in Vietnam. We just focus in Vietnam because that's how we think until then, that's what we can do. And we would like every individual in Vietnam, whoever needs it, wants it, can access to career development materials, knowledge, and turn knowledge into skills. The only way to do it is through disruptive innovation of using technology, platform, skills, real time, you know, all kind of keywords you can talk about, the current technology, to reach out. And in order to do that, we have to be very solid. We need to work with the right people at the right time. We need to strive and learn ourselves greatly. Both my co-founder and I plan to leave the company at 2030 with the next generation of leaders ready by then to take the company to the next turning point. My personal goal is I would love to return and do my PhD in Stanford University. I have some special love for that university. I hope I can make it. I always want to live in the Palo Alto, Oakland area. My partner, he's a token engineer, you know, the crypto guy, you know, a technology guy. And so he can work anywhere in the world. And so by then, my son will be in university, having his own life. And yeah, I only know until then that I would love, after 2030, I would love to doing my PhD and researching and going back to becoming the bookworm with data and stuff. I miss that.
I love it. And I love Stanford. I've been there a little bit. So.
Yay.
Well, so I'm going to take a risk here and end the interview by disagreeing with you just a little bit. So yes, all that technology stuff that's not natural to you, I think is super important. But I think the thought leaders that are talking about things like gratitude, humility, empathy, kindness, those value systems, which is what you have embodied every moment that I've ever known for you, like, I believe that's the compass point for any enterprise in the future. And the technology is an add-on to get there. Because that's what keeps the people there, the talent there. That's what allows the talent to develop. And honestly, that's just what makes the world a better place.
Thank you.
And I think you make the world a better place.
I'm very humbled to hear that. Thank you, Brian.
Well, Phoenix, I'm so appreciative of you for you coming on for this episode. I've always admired your work and your spirit everywhere you've gone. And I really look forward to following along as we look forward into the future. Are there going to be any for listeners to be able to contact you and stuff? What social media or what way do you usually interact with the rest of the world professionally?
My LinkedIn account is still active, okay. Although because in Vietnam we don't use it as often, I use Facebook more often.
Okay.
So LinkedIn and Facebook, and then email, and then we have a website. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so great. I can send you all of that information so you can put on the
show notes. Yep. Podcast. That'll all be on the show notes coming up. Well, okay. Everyone, I think I'm excited. It's late here where I'm at, but I don't know that I'm going to be able to go to sleep now. But until next time, everyone out there, take care of one another And we'll see you next time on Behind the Science of Group.